Drive Time Radio with New York Vinny.
Well, hello there. It's a Saturday morning, just a couple of minutes after 8 o'clock, and it is time for Drive Time Radio. I am your congenial host, New York Vinny. I sit here with you every Saturday morning from 8 to 9, bringing you the latest and the greatest in the automotive world, whether it's automotive culture, racing, local events, car reviews. We drive a car every week, as you well know by now if you listen to the show, and if you don't, we drive a car every week, a new one, and then report back to you on what we think about it. Just the average, you know, there's the critics, and then there's the average people that get into these cars and drive and say, this is good, this is bad, this is good, this is bad, this is good, good, good. I try to look for the good in everything. Some cars you have a little bit more of a problem doing that than with others, but it's been fun. As you always like to recap every couple of shows. I've been doing this a long time. I've driven a new car almost every week since 1993. So you can imagine that I have a lot of experience getting in and out of a number of cars. And it is a job sent from heaven. I mean, who else do you know that has a job where you drive new cars every week? If you're not a car dealer, it's a nice gig if you can get it. And believe you me, so many people have asked me, how do I get this gig? What do I do? Where do I apply? And I just say, you have to have helped. My take on it is I've helped the right lady or gentleman across the street when I was a Boy Scout. Way back when I was a Boy Scout in Troop 201 in Jackson Heights, that emanated from St. Mark's Episcopal Church on 34th Avenue and 82nd Street. Mr. Tremaine was our scoutmaster, and he taught us right, because I figured that the only way that I ever could have gotten a gig like this was to help the right old lady across the street on Northern Boulevard, which was a very busy street way back when, still is now. All right, it is our annual top five cars I did not want to give back. You know, if you've seen, gone on our YouTube channel, or you've seen on Facebook or whatever, we do a usually a goodbye video to most, if not all, of the cars that we drive. And some cars are harder to give up than others, especially if you're especially interested in a car for whatever reason, or you've been looking for a car. There are some cars that you get in and you go, okay, this is a good car. You know, you drive along and, you know, you point out the good things about it. You look for the bad things about it, and you bang out, 3 minutes or 4 minutes of a review. And you talk about it. Then there are these cars that you get that come down the pike every once in a while that you get into it, and you spend, out of the 7 days that you have the car, you spend 7.5 days in the car. You try to, drive the car as much as you can. You come up with reasons to go different places. You go through 4 or 5 tanks of gas instead of the usual 1 or 2 tanks of gas. You take it not only up on the Joe Ricci Memorial road course that we use to test all the cars on, but you find a reason to drive out to Clay Ellum, to the bakery, to grab something, or you find a reason to drive down to Mount Rainier because you're not quite sure if you have to make a left to get into the parking lot of Paradise or a right. So you want to check that out. You want to make sure. You find excuses to drive these cars and put as much mileage as you possibly can on them. And those are the cars that we hope are represented here today. Besides those cars, we also drive a number of cars at press events and certain other things that happen. Sometimes a dealer will call me up and say, hey, Vinny, I want you to you know, jump in this car and drive it and tell me what you think of it, or tell us what you think of it, or mention it on your show, or, you know, whatever comes along, so that people will hear you talk about the car. And when I do that from a dealer or something like that, it is always done with the preconceived notion, the agreement, that I say what I think about the cars. I don't kiss anybody's butt when it comes to talking about cars. I call them like I see them. If a car is a good car, I tell you. If a car is there's a design flaw in it, I tell you about that, because my credibility counts to me. What I tell you, I take it as if I'm the only guy you're listening to when you're going to go out and buy this car. And that's important to me, that you trust what I say. Now, I do make mistakes. I'm not always right. I've been a big proponent of the Chevy Bolt, which is the little electric Chevrolet. And earlier this year, General Motors issued a warning saying, don't park it in your house. Don't put it in the garage. It could burn your house down, which I am going to tell you is never a good selling point for a car. So it's something that with this new, you know, we're going through this new technology at a much quicker pace than we did back in the early 20th century. We are going through this technology and trying to develop it so it'll be ready in, you know, one cycle, one model of a car going through. The reality is it takes years to develop these things. I mean, go back and look at how cars were first developed in the early 20th century. You had all different makes. You had electrics, you had this, you had that, you had gas, you had some of them ran on steam. It all depended on what suited people and what was going to be the eventual winner in what these cars were going to be powered by. And as we all know, internal combustion engines, gasoline engines, won that battle. But their dominance is truly being threatened by electric. People now are looking at electric and fuel cell vehicles and vehicles that contain batteries and different devices. Hydrogen is one that also comes to mind when we look at different kinds of cars. And we don't know 100% what the future is going to hold. But we know that right now, electric is the way most of these companies seem to be going. Now, the problems with the electric systems, not with the cars so much, but with the ability to charge them, to refuel them, is what seems to be the problem for many right now, including myself. I mean, I've been on, I've driven a number of electric cars this year, and several times have been in situations where, you know, the car was great, but trying to find the proper power source to recharge it, trying to, access, get onto the system. Now, a lot of that is, of course, going to be taken care of with a home charging unit. When you buy a car, you buy a home charging unit, you have it installed. And when you go home at night, you plug your car in the garage or outside your house in your carport. And the next morning, you have 200 miles there at least that you're ready to go with. And most commutes for people are not 200 miles. Most people round trip are less than 100. Even if you have to go out and run errands and things like that. So it's a little early to judge and say, okay, this is this and this is that with the electrics. It is a technology that's, the car charging technology is in its infancy. We're learning about it every day. You're now looking at cars that have triple the range they did just 5 years ago. So, those are things you have to remember about the you know, some of the top five. Others in the top five are pure enjoyment. The pure sound of a 392 Chrysler engine just cranking up and rum, you know, and going. There's not many feelings in automotive-dom than that feeling of that car cranking up. So that's what we're going to go through this morning. We'll give you the top five. We'll give you some honorable mentions. We're also going to have our guest of the year. We got Nathan's pick, and we got also Nathan, who we now say good morning to, our erstwhile producer, Nathan. Nathan, good morning. How are you, pal?
Hey, good morning, and happy Saturday.
Happy Saturday to you, too. Is it a happy Saturday, Nathan? Are you really happy, or are you just putting on that face for radio?
Hey, it's not raining out there, and I'm always happy about that.
Yeah, that's a big one for me, too, Pally. If it's not raining, I can go on with my day and start to feel like something good is going to happen. Although, it is quite foggy out there this morning.
It is, but that'll burn off and turn into a really nice day to go out for a drive.
I think so. I'm planning on taking a little ride down to Ocean Shores this morning because I need me a shot of beach.
Oh, yeah. When's the last time we've been able to get out there and do that, huh?
Well, you know, I'm one of those nutty people to go out to the beach even if it's raining or something. So,
you're one of those that does the polar bear plunge.
Well, I've done the polar bear plunge before, yes. I did it with former Wazoo quarterback Drew Bledsoe one year.
That's something I still need to accomplish on my bucket list.
You don't need to, my friend. I mean, listen, if you go through life and you don't jump in 25-degree water, I think you'll be just fine.
It's a Seattle tradition. I've been born and raised here.
Well, that's not my fault. but you know what? It's fun. I had fun doing it. We did it for a worthy cause. It was for Special Olympics down in the Deschutes River in Oregon, and it was when I was covering the Special Olympics for Root Sports many years ago. And Bledsoe said, if you're going to cover this event, you got to jump in. And I said, well, guess I'm jumping. You know, when the quarterback tells you to, go 30 yards and make a left, you go 30 yards and make a left, right?
He's in charge.
He's running the show. So I did it. It was very invigorating. You know, it was very, you know, it was skin bracing and chilling until I got out of the water. Then it got quite cold. Then it was a whole different story. Then I was looking for heaters, wraps, towels, anything to wrap my goosebumps in. So Nathan, a couple of things. First of all, I think you probably want to ask me that question, don't you?
Yo, Vinny, what are you driving this week?
And I thought you'd never ask. I'm driving for the second time, first time this year, but the second time I'm driving a Honda Civic sedan, a car that I absolutely love. You know, I'm a big fan of the Hyundais, big fan of cars, you know, cars that are still actually cars, not SUVs. I mean, I still think that there's a place for these cars in America. And the Honda Civic that I'm driving is the touring edition this week. And it is probably everything you want a car to be. A couple of years ago, Honda came out with this Civic that looked a little like out of Star Wars, you know? Nathan had the big lights on the back and
the C shape.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, you couldn't miss it if you were behind it. And had an interesting front. I think everyone came out of the factory with a spoiler. I mean, it was a car clearly aimed at the Dixon Friday night crowd. And which is not a bad thing. I mean, young people are people that buy cars. But somehow it didn't translate to the people that were running Honda. They said, let's cut back on the styling a little bit. Let's make it look more like the Hondas that people remember, as opposed to the Hondas that young kids are looking at and saying, Mom, I want one of those for graduation. So they dialed it back a little bit with the Civic. And listen, I'm a fan of the styling cues and styling that steps out over the line. And the Civic still does that but it's a solid, good, well-rounded, worth the money kind of car. You know, it's a car that in any form that you buy it in, whether you go for the kind of the high performance versions or just the regular take me back and forth to work, school, shopping and everything vehicle, the Honda does the trick. It fulfills the promise. And what we're lucky enough that they've done with the Hondas is kind of gotten out of the notion that they're appliances and put some zippiness, some fun to drive factor into these cars. The HPD one that I drove about 6 months ago was a blast to drive. The suspension was set up nice. It was set up more as a performance car than it was just a regular sedan. And Honda, of course, has a long tradition in racing, and they pulled it off. This one is not so much racing car as it is family four-door. And again, Honda pulls it off spectacularly in this car. Now, we'll get into it more in next week's show, but suffice it to say that I am excited about taking this car on a long road trip today. The HPD that I had back in, it was around Thanksgiving, if I'm not mistaken, or maybe it was my birthday, you know, September. It might have been even that far back. Was a great road car. Really was. It was one of the best road cars I had driven all year. And it, you know, it carried a nice balance when you were driving it, so it didn't get too boring when you were driving it. It didn't get too soft. You could switch it into sport for a bit more excitement. You have the same thing here with the Civic Touring. It's built a bit more less performance, a bit more road car. So we'll have more on that next week when we do the full review. But suffice it to say that Honda, scores with this car. It's popped up on a lot of best of the year lists. I think it won this week the World Car Automobile of the Year for 2021 award. And I wouldn't be surprised if it popped up in a few other places before it's all said and done today. So that's what I am driving this week. All right, let's start to move into the top five cars I didn't want to give back because there are actually more than five of them. It was hard to cull this list down. I got it down to a list of finalists that were really the creme de la creme of automotive. Now, let me give you a little caveat on this, a little caveat emptor here. There are a couple of companies that for whatever reason do not give me cars. For whatever reason, they have decided that, I don't know why, that I don't get into their cars. I have requested cars from them time and time again. And I get cars from every major car company except for Nissan. And I get cars, I get everything from Rolls Royces and Bentleys right on down to Honda Fits and to, the least expensive cars out there. Because I take care of cars, I give the manufacturers exposure for their loan. It makes it worth their while to make sure I get into cars so I can tell you about them. And so you can go to a dealer and take a look at that car if you're interested. My shows are sponsored, have been sponsored by the Washington State Dealers Association. But for whatever reason, Nissan, who I've had a great relationship over the years, has decided a year or so ago that I did not fit their criteria for getting cars from them. Hey, what are you going to do? Nissan's going to still make cars. if I don't drive one, and I'm still going to report on cars if I don't drive a Nissan. It's their problem, really. As is obvious, I have enough cars to fill my schedule out and then some. But so if they don't want to give me cars to road test and to report to you on, well, you know what? That's their business, I guess. I talk from time to time, have requested to a review so that they listen. But the person who runs things at Nissan has decided that I'm not even worth an email back. And that's sad because I have had, as a matter of fact, for those of you who have listened to me for a long time, Nissan was one of my earliest sponsors of the Fix-A-Field program that we did. When Scott Mazin and Mike Gallagher and all these other people were at Nissan, they loved this program where we got together and put, went out and fixed fields, got volunteers that listened to KJR. We went out on a Saturday and we rebuilt the field, and Nissan was a big part of that. Just as I was a big part of telling you about their cars. But, you know, as if we learn one thing in life, it's that change is constant, and I will continue to work on it because I think that, over the past few years, the product hasn't been all that great. But I still think that we should include them when and if we can. So we'll keep working on it. So that's why I've gotten several calls from people asking me or emails writing me and asking me, why don't you ever talk about Nissan, including a large dealer here in the area. And that's why we never talk about Nissan. All right, we'll take a quick break here. We'll come back. We'll start giving you right down the line the final list and then the top five cars I did not want to give up. It's a Saturday morning. It's Drive Time right here on KKNW.
It's new.
It's new.
It's new. The new 62 Lark by Studebaker.
With big car comfort at compact prices. New, highest, widest doors of all. New, big sofa-soft, deep padded seats. New, thick, rich pile rugs and flat flush floors with no trip over sill. New Lark limousine stretch out room. Big car comfort at a compact price. New giant Lark trunks. Almost 17 cubic feet of cargo space. New big 15-inch wheels give you new riding comfort and surprise. New fresh styling in the big, wide, wonderful line of Larks from Studebaker. Two new Lark Daytonas, America's newest action car in hardtop and convertible styles, with bucket seats, very sporty. A companion console compartment, very spiffy. Available, too, four-speed transmission for exhilarating performance. Now enter the most luxurious car you'll find in the compact price range, the Lark Cruiser. More room and luxury than you'll find in most cars. Here's the new 62 Lark hardtop with sliding sunroof. Available on all Lark sedans and hardtops. Simply beautiful. Just peek inside. Look at these big, loungy limousine seats and thick pile rugs. Here's the new Lark convertible, all dialed up with new 62 styling. There's big wagon room in the new 62 Lark wagon, too. Look at that enormous cargo space. Please be sure to see and test drive all the exciting new 62 Larks at your Studebaker dealer, with big car comfort at compact prices. And remember, they're endurance built by Studebaker.
There's a reason they invented the internet. It's called 1150kknw.com.
Right back to the What a foggy Saturday morning it is. Our top five cars I did not want to get back for 2021. Finale, our show, our top 10 finalists. Actually, a few more than 10 here. I think we're at the 14 finalists. Ran down like this. The Hyundai Santa Cruz, the new little pickup truck that I enjoyed so thoroughly, the Mustang Mach-E, the Genesis GV80 SUV, the Honda Civic Sport HPD, the Genesis G70 sedan, the Toyota RAV4 Prime, the Volkswagen ID4 Pro S all-wheel drive, the Ford Bronco, the Ford F-150 Hybrid, the BMW M440i xDrive Coupe, the Jeep Wagoneer, the Jeep Grand Wagoneer, the Honda Ridgeline pickup, and the Jeep Rubicon 392, the Wrangler Rubicon 392. Those were the finalists, the list that we culled down out of over 100 cars that I drove this year. Some, as I say, at an event, some for a week. But really, when it comes down to it, we had a lot, put a lot of mileage on a lot of cars this year. We took some long trips. And in that vein, I want to mention first a car that I did not talk about on the list, but certainly made our best road trip truck of the year. And that is the Ford F-350 Super Duty Diesel. I took this vehicle from here in Seattle to Salt Lake City, Salt Lake City to San Francisco, and then San Francisco back up here to Seattle. So that was about a 2,000-mile and change, and more actually, road trip. And this truck performed like a champ. It was good on diesel fuel. It was quick. It loaded down, still had a lot of torque, a lot of speed, a lot of passing power. It was comfortable as all get out. I mean, this thing was like driving your couch down the highway. And just a spectacular road vehicle. It did everything you asked it to. And I took this trip with a friend of mine that has trouble getting in and out of vehicles like this. He has, he's sick, and I took it to Salt Lake City to go get him and bring him to the Bay Area. And he had no trouble getting in and out of this vehicle. It was designed so that you could alight into the vehicle and disembark from the vehicle in a very easy motion. It had plenty of handles to grab onto and so on and so forth. So the best road truck of the year, easily the Ford F-350 Super Duty Diesel, plus a quiet diesel. You know, it's not like one of these diesels you hear going down. Sometimes these guys make them as loud as possible. It gives me a headache. Oh my God. Am I turning it to get off my lawn or what? Also the best road car of the year, and I took a trip from Pittsburgh out here to Seattle in the Toyota Camry Hybrid. And when you talk about a car that gives you 40 miles plus to the gallon, when you talk about a car that's roomy, when you talk about a car that in a pinch you can jump in the back seat and sleep in, when you talk about a car that gives you a nice feel of the road without being too much of an appliance, without being too disengaging, the Toyota Camry Hybrid fit the order. It was comfortable. It was engaging enough that when you were driving through the flatlands there in the middle of the country, you were, it was okay. It got great gas mileage, and it was just a pleasure to drive on a long trip. So that gets our award for best road truck and best road car of the year. These are cars that are built and trucks that are built, not necessarily for your everyday use, but when you take that special purpose, which I like to do, of putting them in that one category of road car and road truck, those are the ones that fit the bill perfectly. And congratulations to Ford and to Toyota on that. When you look at the top five list, you really do see a load of diversity here. You really see cars that are really all over the place as far as what they do. So let's start it out with our car number five.
Number five
in the top five cars that I did not want to give back this year was a car that had a lot of buzz about it. We've been talking about it for a couple of years, ever since the time we first heard it was going to come back, going to be reinstated into Ford's lineup. It had a little bit of controversy when it was debuted in many areas, build quality and so on and so forth. But Ford has really seemed to have been able to straighten out their early problems with the Ford Bronco and straighten it out. Now, the Ford Bronco, the one I drove, was the Ford Bronco Sasquatch edition. And with the Badlands package. And I think it was great to drive a car named Badlands up to Camano Island and stop on Thunder Road. You Bruce Springsteen fans will catch the reference there. But the Ford Bronco really brought it home in many different ways that that gave you a vehicle that you could order and build to what you wanted to use it for. You had the Bronco Sport. It had the four doors and was more of almost a station wagon type vehicle. And then you could go all the way up to extremes just by sitting in your dealer and ordering everything, push bar, suspensions, roll bars, skid plates, whatever purpose you wanted to use your Ford Bronco for was there for you. Whether you wanted something that would rip up asphalt or you wanted something that would save on gas, the Bronco came in as a comfortable, competent vehicle that had a very unique yet classic look to it. They kept enough of the old original 1966 Bronco in this vehicle, but yet had every modern automotive convenience and safety feature in it. Now, yes, there were people who complained about wind noise in the Bronco. People complained that maybe the roof panels didn't fit 100% correctly. And unfortunately, I think when you buy one of these cars, especially an off-road vehicle that the body twists and turns in a lot, they're not always perfect. If you buy a Bronco thinking it's going to be as quiet as a Lincoln inside, you're making a mistake because they're not. They're off-road vehicles, and sometimes the elements get inside. Sometimes the elements, for whatever reason, don't react like you want them to. It's not a hermetically sealed environment, especially when you have a top that's going to come off the car. Now, they try to get it like that. But I'm one of those people that say, you know what? Sometimes you're going to get, especially in a first run of a vehicle, first year of a vehicle, sometimes you're going to get those problems. Wait a year before you buy it. Wait till they straighten out the kinks. And if you did that, I think you got a better Bronco than you did if you initially ran out and ordered one as soon as they took the wraps off it in the online preview. But as I said, I thought that the Bronco really gives Jeep and the Jeep Wrangler a run for its money. I can't wait to see the Bronco Raptor. I can't wait to see the Bronco in its most stripped down version. I just think that this is a vehicle that we are going to see around for a long time. You'll see it in all sorts of versions, in an electric version, a hybrid version. There will be a Bronco out there for everybody. And you will wind up seeing a ton of these things on the road. As I said, the one I drove was the Ford Bronco Sasquatch edition. I loved this vehicle. It did everything that that I wanted it to. And I mean, you know, everything that you could think of this vehicle doing, whether it go over hills, over Dale, do the different things that a vehicle like this is expected to do, go off-road, ford rivers. The clearance was enough on it that you could take it up and go through streams and things like that and just not have problems with it. It really, it gave you that that feeling that it was invincible. And I just, as I said, I think it's well worth taking a look at. They're running north of about 45 grand right now, if you want to get into one. Some of them, if they're fully equipped, are going to go 60, that high. But again, you're going to pay a little bit for owning a vehicle that is, you know, is a look at me vehicle right now, a Ford Bronco in this, especially in this trim with the, you know, the extra ground clearance and the tow equipment and the off-road equipment is a look at me vehicle. Nothing wrong with that. I think part of why you buy a vehicle is because it's a look at me vehicle. All right, let's go to number four.
Number four.
I'm going to disappear on you for 1 second here because, as usual, I drop my notes. And that happens every once in a while. They go, boom. All right, number four on the list. We talked about it before. As a matter of fact, I'm driving one this week, the Honda Civic HRD sedan. Honda has had a winner with the Civic since time eternal. And the Honda Civic HRD sedan is no exception. Redesigned earlier this year, the World Car Awards have already named the Honda Civic its car of the year, or the North American, I should say, has already named the Civic. This is a great passenger sedan. The only thing that comes close to it, that touches it, maybe even passes it in some places, are the Hyundais. The large Hyundais, because they include a lot of value for the buck, but there's something about a Honda, the customer loyalty in a Honda, the design of the Honda, especially the interior of the Honda. The interior of the Honda certainly, without a doubt, made you feel like you were more in an Acura than you were in a Honda. It had a great luxury factor to it. It really made you feel like you were, you know, driving something special. It handled well when you got into the, to the roadworthiness of the car, taking a trip with this car, dropping it down into sport and doing that with it and getting it into a place where, you know, you could open it up a little bit. The Honda did not disappoint. Also, the interior in this car is so well designed, so so just done really perfectly. You know, it's the little things when you get in the interior of a car. Honda has done this thing, and I don't know why I get obsessed with these things, but they designed the vents, the air conditioning and heater vents, to blend into the dashboard in a honeycomb pattern. And it's just so well thought out, so well done, that you look and say, if they think this much, if this much thinking goes into the air conditioning vents in this car, in the interior of this car, they must be thinking about this kind of stuff in the rest of the car as well. And so I'll give them credit for that. And say that, yes, in fact, that this is a vehicle that, wow, that just, gives you everything you would expect for the money. It makes you, it renews your faith in Honda. Not that you have a lost faith in Honda, because it is really Honda, one of the most owner loyal brands out there. But wow, I was just blown away by the HRD and how much the young people liked it, and how much I was enjoying this vehicle, and how much I thought that this was a great family car that gave the person that loves to drive a little something, and the passengers a little something as well. So the Honda Civic Sport, again, a great vehicle that you should take a look at if you're in the market for that kind of vehicle. Again, lots of competition from Hyundai and Kia on these vehicles, but you know, there's something about that owner loyalty with Honda that you should check out. We see it right up there on the board. That's the current week's. And yes, if that place looks familiar, it is the Salvadorian Bakery in White Center that has just some of the best tres leche cake. Oh, my God. Oh, Lord. It's good. All right. Number three.
Number three.
All right. Volkswagen makes the list. And our first electric vehicle, Volkswagen ID.4 Pro, is an all-electric vehicle that I believe is going to be the vehicle that puts mainstream America into electric vehicles with a range of, I believe, a little north of 250 miles with a interior that, again, feels much better than the price point in a vehicle. It's spacious. You know, you lose the transmission hump in the car because it's just, you know, the flat battery pack under there. Easy to drive, very well constructed, very well balanced, lots of, power, safety and convenience items, including, a great stereo and a large screen in the middle of the dashboard that will tell you what the car is doing. A funny thing for me with the ID.4 is I love the ambient lighting. And you can change the mood in this car. If you're kind of having a crappy day, you can hit a couple of buttons on the dashboard and get mood lighting. The car can be like your mood ring. Besides that, though, the car is just attractive and well-designed, has great range, is backed up by Volkswagen, which is, I don't know, I think they're building great electric cars now. And wait till you see the Buzz, which is the Volkswagen bus, the electric bus that they are coming out. Wait till that hits the shores in a few months. But the ID.4 seemed to be, to me, one of the most practical and accessible electric cars out there today. No muss, no fuss. You get the charger, you plug it into your garage, and you're on your way. There's plenty of charging stations out there. And that's the only real drawback to me to the electric cars, is they have to get the charging situation straightened out. And I will up front say to you that part of it is I drive different electric cars. If you're driving one electric car and you're hooked up with Electrify America or Charge Point or one of these different charging things, it's going to be a lot easier because you go, you flash your phone, and you're charging while you're, there's one down here in the PCC at Edmonds. You go, you plug the car in, you go inside, you walk around, you load your shopping cart up, you come out, and your car is charged. And as soon as they, come up with a little better system of charging these cars and making it a standard where people kind of know what to expect, I think that the electric charging is going to take off. That's what they need to do. They need to make it as reliable as going and getting gas at a gas station, and as quick as going and getting gas in a gas station. That's the only way they're going to win people over. But I think the ID.4, whether you have it in the two-wheel drive model or the all-wheel drive model, which adds an extra motor, more horsepower, and a lot of fun. All right. Again, this is not an off-road vehicle per se. You're not going to take this thing and go storming up into the woods with this thing. But what you will do is for the occasional trip up to grandma's or, you know, cabin where the wolf is hanging out, Little Red Riding Hood could do herself a lot worse than get up there in a Volkswagen ID4. I would buy it as a family car. If I'm in a market for an electric, this is probably, that might be the first one that I am looking at. All right. That's number three. Number two.
Number two.
Well, Ford, once again, on the list. You know, Ford is becoming a very groovy company when it comes to electrics. excuse me, lots of controversy about the Ford Mustang Mach-E. Remember, we had a number of people on the show that talked about my friend Kirby Arnold, who's a Mustang guy, taking a wait-and-see attitude on this because, you know, to them, a Mustang is a traditional V8 four-speed or automatic gasoline-powered high-performance car. Well, hang on. When it comes to performance, the Mustang Mach-E will cuff your pants. It's that quick, it's that agile, it's that fun to drive. It has a little bit of an identity crisis, not on whether it is a Mustang or not, but whether it is an SUV or a coupe or a sedan or what exactly is it. And I guess that's kind of for you to decide. I think it's a hatchback that will fit, have a voluminous cargo space. Well, you can take it to garage sales and load it up. You can go to the store. You can go to Home Depot with it. It is certainly a vehicle that can be a lot of things to a lot of people. You can pop the family in it and merrily roll along on electricity, not using any gas. And I think it was, you know, if I was doing a straight out car of the year, I think the Mustang Mach-E all-wheel drive would have won it straight out. That's how good the Mustang Mach-E is. I'm surprised we don't see more of them on the road. I think that's just a function of limited availability and dealers right now charging over sticker price for it. But when this whole chip thing calms down and, you know, we kind of get into a year into this thing, I think that those premiums that people are asking for these cars are going to go away. And you'll be able to go out and buy one for less than sticker and not be taken to the cleaners for one. And again, as far as handling, comfort, interior materials, ease of getting in and out of the car, cargo space, man, I don't think you could fill this thing up if you tried. It really was, you know, had such room inside that it was the perfect, to me, if you were buying an electric vehicle and you wanted something a bit more snappy than the ID4, the Ford Mustang Mach-E was the way to go. Get out of the preconceived notion that it's a Mustang. Jump out of that for a second. Just look at it as a car that you want to buy, a sporty car that you want to buy. And the Mustang Mach-E fulfilled and clicked all of those boxes. Every box that you could find on there was checked off with the Mustang E, the Mach-E. And the performance version is even better. I've not driven a high performance version yet, but you know, think about it. You're going from 0 to 60 in like 2 seconds. I mean, that's Don Gartless type of stuff. You know, drags is pro drags just don't go that fast. And I thought it was an excellent vehicle both to drive and to sit there and look at. I know when I took it by my test ground of Dick's Drive-In, where, you know, you roll through on a Saturday night, if people are looking at it, gathered around it, you know, you got a winner. If they're giving you the, what's that? Then you know, you got to take it back to the drawing board. So the Mustang Mach-E, coming in a second on this list. And the number one vehicle.
Number one.
By the way, Nate, nice job on those numbers. Keep those around. We'll have to use those for some other stuff. That was a very good job. The number one vehicle is a vehicle that I have been advocating for a number of years. And that is the small pickup truck. Now, Hyundai took a page out of Subaru's book with the Baja, and they cut the back off of one of their SUVs, the Santa Fe, and they turned it into the Santa Cruz. And with the Santa Cruz, got what a lot of people in America want. A lot of people want a pickup truck, but they don't want to go out and spend $80,000 on a big Jugunda pickup truck that they can't park in the city. They can't fit into a parking space. They can't take it into a garage. People don't want, you know, they want something that is maneuverable in the city, that is okay for less experienced drivers to drive, that if you're going around a corner, you can see all around the car and you don't run somebody over and not even know about it, that will fit a bunch of stuff in if you leave the bed open, and still fit a bunch of stuff in if you take the tonneau cover and close it. It's going to put four people in there. So you can take the kids to school, then go down to Home Depot and pick up the refrigerator and have them loaded into the back of the truck that you want to, that you want to go pick up. They can tow a light trailer or a camper up to the mountains. And the Hyundai Santa Cruz fits that bill perfectly. Oh, how long I have waited for this pickup truck. Now, listen, to be fair, I'm an El Camino guy, man. I love the El Camino, the Ranchero. I love the half car, half pickup ute concept that we lost in this country many years ago. But yet to this day, in many other countries, especially Australia, is alive and well. Well, what Hyundai basically did here is they took a Santa Fe and they cut half of the roof off, put a pickup bed back there, and came up with what I think is a winner. It's not going to be a go all the way up in the woods off-road vehicle. I mean, you can turn it into that if you buy certain suspension components and do some modifications to it. But for that second vehicle you want to take the kids to school, you want to go do shopping, you're going to go around to garage sales and things like that, the small pickup truck, which has all but disappeared from our American landscape, leave it to Hyundai to come up with something that would fill that bill. And that's because Hyundai and Kia, they listen to what their consumers want. And for a long time, people have been saying, boy, do I miss those old Mazda B 2000s and the old Chevrolet Love pickup trucks, a small pickup truck that did the job of a pickup truck, but you could park in a space. It was easily maneuverable in the city. It wasn't a Jugunda loud diesel pickup truck, you know, and didn't cost $80,000. You could get yourself in this high-end Hyundai Santa Cruz for less than $45,000. And it'll do most everything that the big pickup trucks will do, except it has a shorter bed. But if you're going down to the store to throw some bags of potting soil or whatever into the back of this thing, it'll do it just fine. It has plenty of compartments, plenty of neat trick stuff. My number one car of the year, and again, partially because I've advocated for this type of car for so long, is the Hyundai Santa Cruz. I haven't driven a car since the Corvette, the new mid-engine Corvette, that I wanted so much as the Hyundai Santa Cruz. I also want to give an honorable mention, even though it didn't make it into the top five, to the Genesis GV80 luxury SUV. What a spectacular SUV Genesis has come out with. And if this was the top six, the Genesis would have been number six in this thing. Also, the Toyota RAV4 Prime. Quick, agile, fun to drive. And in the small SUV class, crossover class, you can't do better than the Toyota RAV4 Prime. It's just a spectacular vehicle. All right, that is going to wrap it up for this edition of Drive Time Radio. We thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much to Nathan, who helps put the show together and keeps me on track all week. Thank you, of course, to George Jackson, who helped sponsor this show, to my good friend Keith, who also sponsors the show in American Graphics, and to all of you that listen, find us on Facebook, find us on Twitter, and hang out with us every Saturday morning when we are here from 8 to 9 on 1150 KKNW, if the Lord's willing and the creek don't rise. Have a good week.